Welcome to Business Watch. Well, it's apparent that transport regulatory dysfunction is throttling South Africa's tourism industry. SATSA, the country's leading inbound tourism industry association, last week raised the red flag on red tape that is strangling the fragile post-pandemic recovery of the country's critical sector, with hundreds of new and existing tour operators unable to work or being forced to do so illegally, as it says the National Public Transport Regulator, which issues tourism transport licenses, isn't functioning as intended. Well, SATSA called on the presidency's red tape team to urgently step in and declare an immediate moratorium on new and renewal applications for accreditation, for operating licenses and for permits, pending the resolution of the current impasse, as well as to appoint a task team to relook at regulation of tourism vehicles and implement solutions at a higher level. Now, to talk about this, I'm joined by David Frost, CEO of the SA Tourism Services Association, SATSA, Opa Pilani, who's a deputy chair of SATSA and tour operator from Mpumalanga, and Orne Vector, who is SATSA Transport Committee Chair, as well as a tour operator in his own right. David, SATSA is obviously the voice of the inbound tourism industry, so you must be pleased, firstly, that the final COVID restrictions have been lifted.
Yes, Michael, good morning, and we are obviously elated. And you know, any restriction on travel is a bad thing in our book. Just really pleased finally to have these last restrictions lifted, and particularly for our colleagues in the eventing side of things. That was a particularly important part of our sector that, you know, continued to be hampered with capacity restrictions. But, you know, the one thing, I mean, we do have to take lessons here. And the one thing that I found particularly galling, because we led the charge last year to get our country, as a humble tourism association, off the UK red list. It was us alone. You know, government came to the party very late. We got support in the end from business leadership that catalyzed what we called the national incredulity. But what was apparent from the UK scenario was that they were not following the science. And we exposed them. Then the odd thing is we come back here and we bemoan the fact that the rest of the world doesn't follow the science. And then we don't follow the science. So that we lagged well behind the rest of the world in terms of actually lifting cost regulations. And you know, that costs money. So hopefully going forward, we can all be of sober minds and we can be data-driven and make sensible decisions that are in the interests of the economy.
Because every day operating when you're not following the science is a day too many when it comes to such a critically important sector like South Africa's tourism sector. Over 10% of GDP, employs almost 1.5 million people, hugely important sector. Which brings us to this issue of the transport regulator, David. Just in order to perform their work, what sort of accreditation or licensing do tour operators require to provide tourist transport services in the country?
Well, firstly, obviously, their vehicles have to be roadworthy, which is something that you know, sort of in the normal course of events, they have normal licensing. But over and above that, they have to be accredited through what we now have a national entity called the National Tourism, the NPTR, the National Public Transport Regulator. Previously, we're going back to about 2016 now. This was done by provincial entities, and it worked well in certain provinces. It was appalling in others. And, you know, to its credit, the Department of Transport realized this and came up with a solution that was consulted, that said, let's do this nationally rather than have it done provincially, and they established the National Public Transport Regulator. So, you know, everything was sort of good in theory, but what we have seen over the last 5 years, and it has been 5 years, is an absolute systemic failure, coupled with officials in the NPTR that do not follow the Act, that make up their own rules, that are intransigent, and to quote the National Public Transport Regulator chairman pre-COVID on a national tour, where he said publicly that getting an operating permit is a privilege, not a right. Now, that level of bureaucratic intransigence, Michael, is, to my mind, tantamount to economic genocide. This is preventing young as well as established entrepreneurs that are willing to invest in the sector that government calls upon all people to do, to create jobs, to get into business so that we can A, create jobs, we can bring tourists to the country, and we can stimulate our economy. And there you have a bureaucrat spouting that sort of absolute, it's not just nonsense, it's pernicious. And, you know, he carries on. He'll get a full salary. He'll get patted on the back. Where is the level of accountability in our public service that actually understands and gets to grip with the term public service? And it's at the root of our campaign at the moment. We have waited for 5 years to try and resolve this. I cannot tell you the innumerable meetings, letters that we have written to various ministers, meetings with DGs of both tourism and transport over the years, interactions with the NPTR itself, and all to no avail. So the actual system is broken. And what we are calling for is a moratorium so that we can sort the problem out. And we're calling on government to set up a task team that includes us, because we are a participant, that we can sit together once again, bring good people to the table, sober minds, and we can come up with an equitable solution. Because my final comment in just responding is this is not happening in our competitor countries. Tourism is the most competitive economic sector on the planet. You can take a holiday to every single country in the world if you walk into a travel agency. You don't do that when you're in the automobile game or if you compete in the cashew nut industry. You compete against a handful of countries. Tourism, you compete against every other country in the world. This licensing issue is not happening in Crete. It's not happening in Vietnam. It's not happening in Ireland. There, it's a seamless thing. You get a license because you want to engage in economic thing. And if you comply with a basic set of criteria, which should not be onerous and are self-evident, then have an expeditious process that allows people to get licensed so they can get on with the job of doing the business of tourism and contributing to the economy and jobs.
It really is self-evident. And thank you, David. Opa, when you look at it, I mean, ultimately what we as a country should be demanding of our elected officials is to create this enabling environment that will allow operators to thrive and for us to really build a competitive advantage that we have. And that is our local tourism sector and our beautiful weather and our fantastic country into something that is a national asset, not placing regulatory constraints and handcuffs around ourselves. Just talk to me about some of those structural issues that have emerged through the this creature that is the National Public Transport Regulator over the last 5 years. Structurally, what is leading to such incompetence, apart from this clear attitude of a regulator not waking up in the morning and wanting to serve, but rather looking for ways to regulate?
And the most difficult thing is you have a lot of incompetent people in the public sector and who have got no clue on what they are doing. And unfortunately, they are given responsibilities to work and assist in growing this economy. The biggest barrier that we find now when you want to do business in our country, especially in the tourism sector, is government. You know, it is the biggest barrier. It is government. It's like every morning there is someone that wakes up who is a bureaucrat in the corridors of power and say, how can I make it difficult for the tourism sector to operate? That's what we are seeing every day. If it is not licensing, it is a bridge certificate. If it is not that, it is visas. If it is not that, it's a whole lot of basket of stumbling blocks that are created by government. And that's the challenge that we face ourselves. And I don't want to be drawn into the politics of deployment, but I would really would urge government that there are capable women and men in this country that understand how the economy runs. And it is unfortunate that many of those people that are given this responsibility to be able to help in growing this economy have never run any business in their life before. And therefore, to them, it really doesn't bother them if an entrepreneur is struggling. Those are the challenges that we are faced with as a sector. And we are seeing it now with even this interim board that they have put in place, that it is still following all those bureaucratic stumbling blocks in processing these licenses, which we still do not have as we are having this conversation now.
Now, Honor, it's deeply frustrating to listen to your colleagues, I'm sure, talk about this, but the impact personally on this licensing paralysis on your business, just share some insight on that level.
Well, the impact is huge, and I mean, this is just one business. When we did a survey recently, we found that more than 900 applications, just from those few operators that responded to the survey, are still outstanding, many of them for 2 years or 3 years. And to use my business as an example, I bought new vehicles in 2019. This was before the pandemic, while there was a board at the NPTR. It was supposedly a functioning body. And I applied on time. Everything was correct. I've got my receipts, but it's been 3 years now, and I still do not have the operating licenses. So for 3 years, my vehicles have been standing, stranded, unable to use them. I have to pay every month for the vehicles themselves, for maintenance, for insurance, and I lose income. But from those vehicles. And that amounts to millions of rand of loss that the NPTR is directly, damage that they're directly doing to the economy. And you can multiply that by hundreds of operators throughout the country. There are hundreds of vehicles currently stranded, unable to operate legally. And even those that are, strictly speaking, able to operate legally, because there is a clause that allows operators to continue operating on an expired permit as long as they've applied for renewal on time, until the NPTR issues the new license. That clause is ignored by the cops on the side of the road, and we find operators being fined, operators being impounded, tourists being stranded on the side of the road because they're harassing and impounding tourist vehicles. It's unprecedented. It is an unbelievable crisis, and as David said, it's economic suicide, economic genocide, really. So, and it's important, I think, to highlight that this problem is not a pandemic-related problem. This existed before the pandemic. Back in 2016, when they started, right from the beginning, they implemented the Act incorrectly. And I'll just briefly explain how it works, because it's quite interesting. The Act is actually, you know, it's the idea of accreditation is that once an operator is accredited as a fit and proper entity to transport tourists, then they qualify automatically for their operating licenses. And the receiving an operating license at that point for an accredited operator should be a same-day process. Same day or next day, there's a 24-hour deadline written into the law. That has never happened. They make no distinction between accredited and non-accredited operators. Everyone has to go through a new application process. They've made the process so much more cumbersome than the law requires. There's more than 30 documents required. Those documents go missing. People, emails don't get answered. You get asked 3, 4, 5 times for the exact same documents that you've sent already just because they've misplaced them. And if you ask operators who've been there, who've been to this one little office in Pretoria that has taken over the function from all the provincial operating license boards that used to handle this function. It's a nightmare up there. The piles of papers standing shoulder high, you know, against all the walls. It's complete chaos. There's no wonder that operators are not, or applications are going missing. Operators are not receiving licenses. They're being asked to resubmit documents. So as Opa said, there's no competence. There's no tourism experience. And this is not a pandemic-related problem. This problem was existed long before the pandemic.
And it's frightening to hear how that centralization has led to a worsening of a crisis. And one can understand, potentially, to be very very, very sympathetic here, and to give the benefit of the doubt, that potentially it could have been a capacity issue for the first few years. If you're taking over all the provincial work and you're centralizing it in one office, maybe it'll take a bit of time to become capacitated. And that's giving huge benefit here after 5 years to see this continuing and ongoing. It's a national crisis. David, what sort of interactions have you had with the department, with the DG, for example, to try and resolve this over the last 5 years?
Well, I mean, as I said, Michael, we've had copious interactions. There was one meeting that took place at the Soweto Hotel in July 2017 with the current minister, and the DG, who is still the current DG of tourism, because that's our line function. Although this is governed by transport, we go in the first instance when we have issues to our ministry and to our department, which is fit and right and proper. Because the tourism, as you know, is bedeviled, is bedeviled and impacted on by a variety of other ministries and departments.
Home
so what we do is to try and, you know, instead of running around like headless chicken, we go through our DG and minister. So if we have issues, and we've had safety and security issues, we don't just run off to the police and then we work through our line ministry equally when we have issues with visas and home affairs. We look to our ministry and our department because that's their job to help us to unblock the problems. So we had that in 2017. I mean, so he's been aware of it since then. 2018, December, there was a meeting that the DG of Tourism called together with the DG of Transport. These issues were tabled. But, you know, according to the DG of Tourism, he's done his job. He organized a meeting. That is not your job. Your job, sir, is to solve the problem. Where's the follow-up? That was 2018. Another example, in April 2020, Minister Kubai, who was Minister of Tourism, gathered us into a Zoom meeting at the start of the pandemic, and the DG was present and of tourism and said, notwithstanding the fact that we are under the cosh with the pandemic, let's use this time to clear the legacy issues. I put it to the DG, what, sir, have you done since April 2020? Because it's now June 2022. What have you done? Have you followed up? Have you done anything? And the answer from our side, when we look at the impasse and the problems we have, is absolutely nothing has been done. We have put forward, as we say, very equitable and elegant solutions to the problem. And one of them, while we say we should have a look at a task team, is that there may be solutions that are not simply a rearranging of deck chairs on the Titanic. So simply reappointing a board where you've got a systemic failure, you know, it's just changing the staff on the bridge Titanic. It's still going to hit the iceberg. It's still going to sink. So let's not do the classic South African rearranging of deck chairs. Let's look at the task team. What we did, and there's a precedent here, once again, for the moratorium. In 2016, there was a big computer sort of systems problem in the Gauteng issuing entity. Because at that stage, it was done provincially. And we had a very good MEC in Gauteng, Ishmael Vadi. We went and met with him. In the meeting, he turned to his officials and he said, I've listened to them. These guys are trying to do business. Whose problem is this? It's not they didn't cause it. We did. It's our problem. Guys, 18-month moratorium. In the meeting, 18-month moratorium. And he said to officials, you haven't got 18 months. I want this fixed in a year. Get work. So there was a politician who took leadership and ownership, who was proactive and sensitive to the plight of the industry. So we're saying Ishmael Vadi has now retired. But he is somebody who understands the sector. He could possibly, and we're not, please, I don't mean to, press him into service. It's not my role. But there, if I was the president or the minister of transport, there would be somebody who could head a task team and look at it. There's also another possibility here, Michael, and that is where the state hasn't got the capacity to deliver these issues, why don't we look at a form of self-regulation? And once again, a precedent exists. Sandparks issues licenses to open safari vehicle operators. So most people, if you're local, you can take your car in, or if you're a foreign tourist, you can hire a car. But equally, there are a lot of tourists that don't use hired cars. So that's why, once again, our national tourism transport sector is so important, because these are people who get shuttled around in between sedans up to huge buses.
Yep.
But they get to the side of Kruger, it's one of our big attractions, and they access the park through a series of open safari vehicle operators. And Sandparks were doing this, but Sandparks' day job is conservation, not tourism transport issues. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing had ground to an acrimonious halt. And a very forward-thinking CEO at Sandparks got together with myself, and we mooted the possibility of SATSA stepping in and providing that role. We negotiated for 8 months. We came up with an elegant solution. And for 5 years, it worked perfectly.
We as SATSA did the regulation. We managed that. There was a revenue stream back into the park, and it worked perfect. So these are yep. possibilities that could be explored. And all we're asking for is some level. I mean, the very fact that there is still a deafening silence from government on this issue, because we've gone big. This campaign has gone out in the media all yep. over. So for 5 years, nothing. We've done this campaign now for a week. And do you think anybody's picked up the phone? I mean, we've appealed to the president and the Red Tape Institute.
I was going to ask you if you've spoken to Sipho Nkosi or anyone at Operation Vulindlela, because, well, I mean, they seem to have had some success in other sectors.
Well, I'd love to know what success they've had, Michael, because one doesn't know how to access it. There's no public, it's not, well, here's the number you call or here's the email. So we've tried to work through Business Unity South Africa and business leadership who seem to have some form of thing. And you know, nobody's provided us with any tangible contact details that we can. So we've tried through those entities to sort of work through that. But, you know, where is the performance appraisal issues? You know, my public service is going to be performance appraised. Well, who is the DG of Transport and the DG of Tourism? What have you done to solve the problem in 5 years? In 5 years? No. Seriously.
It is. It's beyond the pale. Opa, what would you like to see happen from here in terms of that high-level task team in order to fix the systemic issues? And Orne, maybe over to you as well. If we're looking to overhaul the system and level it and rather rebuild something that's more fit for purpose, what would you like to see? Opa, let's start with you.
Look, this is simply a no rocket science issue. It's a very, very simple issue. And we are calling on government right now. The Office of the President, we're saying, if we need to sort this thing out, we've got vehicles that are standing and they are ready to operate. Give us a moratorium on these operating licenses whilst you get your house in order. That's what we are asking for. We're asking for people to do their job. We are not asking for a pound of flesh. We are not asking for any extraordinary thing. All we are asking for is that allow us to operate by giving us licenses. If you can't give us licenses, give us a moratorium so that we can be able to operate. We've said it. We are requesting that. Let's sit down with the tourism sector, with the tour operators, with the players, and design a system of unblocking this challenge, because we are the people that are on the ground. And we know the frustrations that we are faced with. So therefore, we are better placed to come up with suggestions on how we can be able to resolve this problem. And we don't want to operate illegally. We want, because the consequences of operating illegally are immense. What happens if one of our operators is involved in an accident? Then that's another a problem. But we are sitting with tour operators right now that are battling to meet their monthly payments because they cannot operate. And the impact is huge, because if you can't transport tourists around, it then affects all the other tourism products. You can't get them to attractions. There are people that are working there. You can't get them to accommodations. There are people that are working there. The domestic sector, as we look at it right now, it's largely pro-black and doesn't have vehicles. They depend on these tour operators to take them around. And therefore, I just really don't understand why it would be so difficult to understand that we need to get this economy working.
Thank you very much, Orne. A minute to go. What are your concluding thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, tourism is a priority sector. The government has said that. The president has mentioned removing barriers, of the regulatory barriers for business to, you know, to succeed and to grow the economy. And tourism is a low-hanging fruit. It's a massive industry for us. And this, as Opa said, is not rocket science. It's easy to solve this. If we can get the right people with tourism experience, to head this up and to look at or head up this task team and to look at the deregulation of the tourism transport industry. And even if the law was simply applied as it was meant, as it is written, where accreditation is done within 60 days, And it means something. It means after that, you can immediately get your operating license. No fuss, no pile of 30 documents, just the normal papers, the documents that are specifically mentioned in the law to prove that your vehicle is roadworthy and insured and so on. And so that on the same day, you can get that operating license for your vehicles. Then our operators can get back on the road and we can carry on with business. And we don't have to spend our time running after trying to fix the red tape obstacles.
It really is a travesty that you have business begging its government to be able to operate and grow businesses and help the economy transform and do all of those good things when we can't even get the basics right, sadly. Around the table, that was David Frost, CEO of the South African Tourism Services Association, who was joined by Opa Pilani, Deputy Chair of SATSA and a tour operator from Mpumalanga, and Onay Vector, finally, from SATSA, Transport Committee Chair, and also a tour operator, sharing their painful experience over the last 5 years in trying to get the most basic of things changed to ensure we can get the economy growing. Are you listening, Mr. President? Doesn't look like it.